Breaking news. On your side, we have footage of a disturbing event at the temple in the court of the Gentiles. A man named Jesus is overturning tables. He's throwing out people and animals, and money is being grabbed by the crowd. Our Lenten contemplative journey is interrupted by this chaotic scene in the very place where worship directed the people of Israel to their identity as God's people. This is a disruptive action by Jesus. So many sermons have called this portrait of Jesus, cranky Jesus. I am sure that more than once in 36 years, I have called him cranky myself. As if this behavior is atypical of the one we know as healer, companion, friend, teacher. As if Jesus is just having a bad moment or a temper tantrum that would soon resolve itself and go away. In today's terms, we would say Jesus needed a timeout or maybe a mental health day. But the community that carried this story knew that Jesus' anger was serious business because they put it, the Johannine community, put it in the second chapter of John. So after we had that beautiful poetic introduction to, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, then we have this anger. And we should wonder why that's part of the initial telegraph to us. So the Johannine community handed us this text for a reason, for a purpose. Now in the church, we don't talk much about anger. And I think we're too quick to add the label of righteous to make it acceptable under certain circumstances. Well, that was righteous anger. But I want us to sit with this disturbing piece about Jesus' anger and the curious pairing by the lectionary elves with the Ten Commandments. What are we to make of these two side by side? Anger is something that makes us uncomfortable. The very air around us is disturbed. Our gut clenches. Our blood pressure rises. Our color changes. We get red in the face. We say things in a loud voice. And sometimes we strike out with our bodies. Anger is not tame. It is not pretty. It is disturbing. And it interrupts the status quo. Jesus is not merely frustrated or irritated or cranky. Jesus is furious. We don't know what to do with anger, and so often we try to silence it. Bury the rage or the wound that started it in the first place. And we don't want to be angry, and we don't want to be on the receiving end of the anger of others. But if we hide from it, if we stuff it down in some dark corner of ourselves, it claims even more power. It can grow. It can be death-dealing. If we are brave, we need to face it, to uncover the source and to pay attention to the wound that caused it in the first place. And of course, we will try to reconcile, to restore a right relationship, to realign, to heal what has been ripped apart and torn open. Jesus is angry that the tables of the temple mean that people must buy their way into God's favor. That a temple tax is levied on worshipers you know, offerings for sin, for the birth of a child, even for the blessing of a good harvest. Paying for these things is in direct opposition to what Jesus was about in his life and his ministry, the unconditional love of God. The temple practices distorted the purposes of a welcome table, of a welcoming space. What we see in this piece from John is a distortion of access. A distortion of access. Jesus has fashioned a whip of cords, and the money is rolling everywhere. The animals are noisy, the pigeons are flying into the air. Jesus is angry, wounded to think that money bought status in God's very dwelling place. The table had become a biased table. A greedy table. It is offensive. It misrepresented God, who is not interested, not invested in a caste system. I think what the Ten Commandments do in today's readings give us not a list of rules, but markers against the distortion of life. Where ignoring these distortions means that God is not at our center. The tablets of Sinai are a call to live a faithful life as an alternative to the distortions of the Jerusalem temple. And as followers of Jesus, we are called to resist the distortions of our own day. So we're not to spend our existence in production and consumption and buying and selling, having, trading, accumulating, and the drive for more and more at the expense of our neighbor. These words are from Walter Brueggemann, retired professor of the Hebrew Testament. Greed, covetousness, diminishment of others by lying or stealing or doing violence, rip open our social fabric. God is not a cover for our personal or cultural agenda. God is love. God is compassion. God is mercy. When we ignore the commandments, when we ignore our baptismal promises, we cause distortion, and the image of God is untrue. And really, the image of God in us is untrue as well. The image of God is distorted, is wounded by our behavior. Jesus has called his disciples to orient their lives differently, and he angrily exposes religious authorities in particular who fracture the true purpose of our lives. Those who are keepers of the God story have failed. They have taken God's people in the wrong direction. The prophets spoke truth to power, and Jesus does the same. And it will mean that he will be killed. He came to make us whole and joyous and free to live a meaningful life, to live our true identity as God's people, as beloved community. Where do we sit at tables of distortion and harm today? What needs to be overturned, and how will that happen? This past Thursday, several people were gathered at the Murray Hill Neighborhood Library. And we were there to view a film called Just Another Bombing that was done by a documentary filmmaker, Hal Jacobs, who lives in Decatur, Georgia. This film, which is not available freely yet, is about a Ku Klux Klan bombing here in Jacksonville in 1964. The Klan bombed a home. of a six-year-old child and his single mother because she had enrolled him in a neighborhood school which was then all white. The school, the Lackawanna School, happened to be designed by a black architect. How ironic. And you may not have heard about it if you are longtime Jacksonville residents, because it was put on the back page in like a couple of lines, just another bombing. There was another bombing. The five people who planted the dynamite under that house were all acquitted. The story was picked up by Walter Cronkite and the New York Times. The survivors are no longer young. Donal Godfrey was 6 years old when that happened. His mother, Iona Godfrey King, looks pretty good for her age. They did a presentation for the Jacksonville City Council the day after they had gone to the library. Donal grew up to be a Foreign Service officer and served in Africa, where he now lives. PTSD is one of his companions. Can love heal that space, that wound? With the help of the city's, of Jacksonville's Human Rights Commissioner, we learned, while we were there, we learned more history, we learned new vocabulary, and we experienced gracious space. I also know, recently met a lawyer who is now a judge, who said that when he was in law school, he wanted to quit. There was so much bias. He said, so one day he taped somebody's outrageous statement to the back of his dorm door, so that he would have to look at it before he went to class. Because what it did was make him angry. The outrageous, untrue, biased statement made him angry, and he used that anger as fuel to persevere. The wounds of racism, the distortion of human dignity should make us angry, and it should motivate us to action. But there are other tables that we sit at. So some of us of a certain age sit at the table of ageism. NPR and everybody else has been talking about cognitive function over age 70. I'm just saying. These social pundits irritate me. They get my back up. Some of our young people sit at tables of bullying. Some of our acquaintance sit at tables of hunger. Some of our elders sit at the table of loneliness. We sit at the tables of addiction and of fractured relationships and many other tables that wound us because they are a distortion. So what did Jesus do with his anger? In the last few words of today's section from the gospel, I called it a pericope at 8 a.m. A pericope is just a little portion, the last few letters, lines of the gospel for today. Jesus tells you what he's going to do with his anger. He's going to offer himself in love. He's going to use that scene at the Jerusalem table as fuel. in the temple of his own body, he will make his way to the cross. And it is in John's gospel that he tells us, "No one takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own accord, and I will pick it up again." The Episcopal Church in this city has taken up the wounds of distortion in many ways. I understand that the Episcopal Children's Services now has served over 27,000 children. They've taken up the distortion of poor children in the arts through the Cathedral Arts Project. And there are many, many other ministries. We turn over the tables of distortion. We reconcile, we refresh, we realign, we renew. And we work for right relationships with God and right relationships with each other. Love turns over the tables of distortion. There are city groups like One Jacks or 90 Forward or iCare or the Interfaith Coalition. There are so many groups that are trying to help us move in the right direction. Long ago and far away, love turned over a table of wounding, a table of difference that I thought separated me from others. But Jesus corrected that distortion and set me free to be who I was created to be. Perhaps today you can look at the tables where you sit. Do any of them need to be overturned? Will you call on love to do that? Breaking news, on your side, Jesus. Amen.